ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः विष्णुवराय कृष्णप्रसाद भूतले श्रीमाने भक्तवरान्त स्वामी श्रीनामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे नरविशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात देश तरणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु निचंद श्री कदाश्री गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्रीमद् भागवत कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 7 वर्स 43 उवाच चासहंकि अस्य बंधन अनयनम सति मुच्यताम एषा ब्राह्मणो नितराम गुरु उवाच सेड च एंड Asahanti, being unbearable for her, Kasya, is Bandhana, being bound, Anayanam, bringing him, Sati, the devoted, Muchitam, Muchitam, just get him released, Esha, this Brahmana. Brahmana, Nitaram, our guru, teacher. Translation, she could not tolerate Aswatthama's being bound up by ropes and being a devoted lady, she said. Release him, for he is a Brahmana, our spiritual master. Purport, as soon as Aswatthama was brought before Draupadi, she thought it intolerable that a Brahmana should be arrested like a culprit and brought before in that condition, especially when the Brahmana happened to be a teacher's son. Arjuna arrested Asatthama, knowing perfectly well that he was the son of Dronacharya. Krishna also knew him to be so, but both of them condemned the murder without consideration of him being the son of a Brahmana. According to revealed scriptures, a teacher or spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or a spiritual master. A guru is called also an acharya, or a person who has personally assimilated all the essence of shastras and has helped his disciples to adopt the ways. Aswatthama failed to discharge the duties of a brahmana or teacher, and therefore he was liable to be rejected from the exalted position of a brahmana. On this consideration, both Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Aswatthama. But to a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of Shastra vision, but as a matter of custom. By custom, Aswatthama was offered the same respect as offered to his father. It was so because generally the people accept the son of a brahmana as a real brahmana by sentiment only. Factually, the matter is different. A brahmana is accepted on the merit of qualification, not on the merit of simply being the son of a brahmana. But in spite of all of this, Draupadi desired that Aswatthama be at once released, and was all the same a good sentiment for her. This means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally. But still, such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Translation, she could not tolerate Aswatthama's being bound by ropes and being a devoted lady. She said, release him, for he is a brahmana, our spiritual master. So, here we see the conflict of dharmic principles and sentiments and practicality. So the one rule is that everyone must respect the brahmana as the highest person in society, And of course, among the Brahmanas, some are considered teachers, respected teachers. So they are given even a higher respect. And for people lower on the social rung, that is Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, they are obligated to respect the Brahmana in society. But then we see that simply because one is in the position of a Brahmana, that does not mean that he has all the qualities of a Brahmana. And even though he has the qualities, he may make a mistake. And because of that mistake, he may get criticized. He may do sinful activities. So we see the position of Ajamil. He came in a Brahmin family, and then he fell down into sinful activities. So is he still respected as a Brahmana? Or should we condemn him? Or we have the case of Jagai Madai. They're also supposed to be respectable in their families, Brahmanas, but they also became very sinful, drunkards and whatever, thieves, criminals. So, from a customary point of view, yes, we should respect the Brahmana. But then, if they're doing such bad acts, how can we respect them anymore? It doesn't seem reasonable. So there must be some exceptions to the rule, obviously. So a Brahmana is respectable and worshipped by society as long as he follows the codes of a Brahmana and doesn't violate those codes. And if he does, then we cannot give him the same respect. Still, even if he does break the code, still there is some sort of feeling of we have to, you know, respect Shastra. So they are a little lenient towards the Brahmana when he commits sinful activities, as opposed to a Sudra who does some very sinful activities. So they'll give some they'll be tolerant of the Brahman's deviations to some degree. So such considerations are there. And we'll see the same type of conflict arising in the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna does not want to fight because he has to kill people who are respectable relatives, Brahmins, gurus on the opposite side. This is a very similar type of conflict. Nevertheless, we know that Krishna is saying, well, you have to fight and you have to kill because they are adharmic. So if a Brahmana is in a good position but he's on the wrong side, he's doing adharma and he supports adharma, then you may have to be killed in the battle of Kurukshetra. So that is one attitude we can take. Okay, let's kill all the Brahmanas on the opposite side or whatever. Still, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, Draupadi was acting according to, one, custom, because it's customary to respect Brahmins, so she was hesitating, should we, even he's killed her sons, but nevertheless, we should give some respect to the Brahmanas. And she could not even tolerate, not just killing him, she could not tolerate him being bound up. That was not even killing him. It didn't come to that. But simply seeing him bound up and dishonored, that was very uncomfortable for her. So she said, it says here, she could not tolerate this. Asahanti. She could not tolerate the situation of a Brahmana being bound up. Any Brahmana, even if he was a criminal. Then she says, release him. He has to be released. You don't dishonor him in this way. In spite of the fact that, you know, she had done the crime and it was her own children. So Prabhupada also remarks, yes, this is her compassion as a great devotee or Vaishnava. The Vaishnava rises beyond bodily conceptions and doesn't think, well, it's my children that were killed, therefore this person deserves to die. So she's not attached from that position. Again, we have the idea, well, everyone's going to die anyway, so the children are dead now, it doesn't matter. So that's a jnana type of conception. They're atmas and they can't die anyway, so what's the problem? So this also takes place in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna's first advice to Arjuna is, don't lament for all these people that you have to kill because they don't die. They are atmas. It's not killing them, really. And Vishnu Chakravarti in his commentary said, well, yes, this is the argument given that jnana, concepts of jnana, ideas from jnana are higher than those from dharma, or karma. So we have all the rules of dharma, but from the higher point of view, jnana, then we can give a new advice. Yes, he could still kill because they're not the body, etc. So he preaches from the point of view of jnana. Not body, etc. So we have various aspects of the argument, should he be killed or should he not be killed. We also know that higher than jnana is bhakti. The principles of bhakti are even higher. So of course, in bhakti also, we include the principles of jnana, we're not the body, etc., and we should be detached from the material world. But then, we have another principle as a Vaishnava. What does Krishna want? The jnani won't ask that question. But we say, what does Krishna want? If Krishna says fight, we fight. If Krishna says we don't fight, we don't fight. No matter what jnana says, no matter what karma says. So in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, Krishna says you fight. So, and this is more or less agreeing with some aspects of karma, that you should kill the enemy if the enemy attacks or whatever. And also with jnana, that you should not be attached to the body. But Krishna could also say, don't fight. He can also say that. And then Arjuna will have to agree with that also, because he's a great devotee. He follows him. So, for the Vaishnava, the highest principle is, what is the desire of the Supreme Lord? And therefore, dharma, adharma, jnana, ajnana, whatever, doesn't really matter so much. It's a little more flexible than both of these positions. That is the Vaishnava position. So, the conflict here, another conflict here is that the Pandavas are also Kshatriyas. So they're acting within dharma, so they have to act according to the dharma and set good example for others. At the same time, they're great devotees of the Lord, so they have to follow Krishna also. So Krishna himself also comes to the world to establish dharma, so generally should not act against dharma. That is his principle also. But then we see that he also acts the opposite. So we see in his Vrindavan pastimes, the gopis are taken from their house, they leave their houses, and they forget about dharma completely. And we can blame Krishna for that. Because they're attracted to Krishna, they leave their families. They're in the house, and they're taking care of the cows, and the children, and the husbands, and suddenly they leave them. It's adharmic. And it's because of Krishna. All because of the attraction of Krishna. They have great attraction for Krishna. So we can blame Krishna. You're starting a dharma in this way. So on that high level, it doesn't matter. It's the relationship between Krishna and his devotee. That is what matters the most. And therefore, the jnana and dharma and yoga and all these other things are all secondary principles on that very high level. So, nevertheless, the conflict is here because they're also acting as preservers of dharma, that is the Pandavas, and they have to set a good example for others. How are we going to get out of this position of, you know, doing the right thing, not breaking the rules of dharma, etc.? At the same time, they're great devotees of the Lord, so what does Krishna want? Now generally, of course, Krishna will side with the dharmic side and kill the enemies. And he told them, Arjuna and the Pandavas, you fight and don't worry about what's going to happen, because I've decided already they're all going to die, so you can be my instrument. So there's no worry about sin or anything involved in all of this. So consequently, Aswatthama was on the wrong side, so he also deserves his eye. And even Dronacharya also, he's on the wrong side. Bhishma's on the wrong side, so they all should die. There's no problem there for Krishna. yet, we see in this example that he also has compassion for his devotees and their feelings. And because Draupadi doesn't want him killed, then Krishna also agrees, okay, he should not get killed. Even though he thinks in one sense, yes, he should be. So he solves the problem later on. So this is an example of, as I said previously, Krishna's cleverness. He's very intelligent to bring about a solution that satisfies everybody. He doesn't kill him in one sense, physically, and therefore Draupadi's satisfied. But he cuts off his hair, so therefore his top knot, so therefore he's dishonored from the Kshatriya point of view. He's no longer considered honorable because he got his hair cut off or whatever. So he's in a miserable position because of his honor. So the Kshatriyas can be satisfied that he was, you know, punished, properly punished, killed in one sense because his honor was taken away. So in this way, Krishna solved a particular problem. So these are the particular things that happen in the material world. When the Supreme Lord comes into the material world and establishes Dharma, then we'll get such particular problems that may arise that require solutions like this. Which will not arise in the spiritual world because nobody gets killed and there's no real fighting there at all. But when you come in the material world and Krishna has to establish Dharma, then we come across problems like that. Krishna uses his intelligence very nicely to solve all the problems so everybody is satisfied. So that is the nature of Krishna, that he satisfies everybody. He satisfies the devotees, of course, everybody is satisfied. He also satisfies the demons. Because when Krishna kills demons, they get liberated. And in some cases, they end up in the spiritual world. So there's a story of when Krishna and Arjuna go to the see Mahavishnu because the Brahmana's sons disappeared. And then Arjuna said, well, I will get the sons back, and if I don't, have to kill myself, because it's a dishonor that I didn't protect the Brahmanas. And he can't find them anywhere in the whole universe. And he's about to kill himself. And then Krishna says, wait. And he gets his chariot and his horses, and they go outside the universe, and go through the walls of the universe, enter into the Karna ocean, and they see Mahavishnu, and there the sons are there. Vishnu tells him, well, I took the sons of the Brahmana because I know that you are upholder of Dharma, and both of you have to search for the sons and get the sons back. So this is the way method I had of bringing you here so I can see you. So that was his particular, you know, method of doing things. So in this way he became very, very satisfied on seeing Krishna. And the idea of the Brahmana there, Brahmanas are, you know, respectable persons, and then the Kshatriya has to protect them. So Arjuna was following this mode of upholding Kshatriya honor. And of course Krishna also was. But Krishna's motive there was to protect, more than that, to protect Arjuna. Okay? Arjuna had to be honorable, so therefore Krishna had to do something for him. And therefore he helped Arjuna by taking him up to see Mahavishnu, etc. So Mahavishnu, of course, was very eager to see them, and therefore he made this particular arrangement, in spite of the fact that he shouldn't have done such a thing. Because Mahavishnu is an expansion of the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord is affectionate to Brahmanas, so why would Mahavishnu afflict a Brahmana so many times by taking away his sons and causing him misery? He shouldn't do that. Okay? But he would do this because he was eager to see Krishna. Otherwise, he could not do such a thing. So there is, of course, another strange meaning to the words. The literal meaning sometimes is taken otherwise. And the explanation would be that Krishna and Arjuna are expansions of Mahavishnu. And he brought them there And then he says, you come back to me after you kill all the demons or whatever like that. But that contradicts the very nature of the story, because we see that Mahavishnu does extraordinary things just to see Krishna. And if he's Krishna is an expansion of him, why he has to be so eager to make this arrangement to see him? You can see him very easily if Krishna's only his expansion. But it's not like that. He has to go through this extreme measure of stealing all the Brahmana's sons in order that Krishna comes to him and makes this arrangement. So, in other words, he does not have the same powers as Krishna. Krishna has more powers than him. So, now Mahavishnu even seems to break the rules of Dharma by making these strange arrangements out of eagerness to see Krishna. And he's an amsa of the Supreme Lord. He's an expansion of the Supreme Lord. He's the Supreme Lord himself. Yet, he is also very eager to see Krishna. And so he ultimately breaks the rules of Dharma also to do this. So, in this way, we have various pastimes taking place where Krishna and his devotees act in the material world, do various things. And the ultimate important issue is the relationship between Krishna and his devotees, and secondarily, everything else happens. So the protection of Dharma, the protection of the devatas, maintenance of the material world take place. But that is secondary to the Lord's desire to please his devotees and respond to all of his devotees' wishes. So the here we see the Krishna interacting with his devotees and at the same time interacting with the opposite side, that is the demonic side, including Ashwatthama. And he satisfies everybody. So Mahavishnu, as I said, when he saw Krishna, then he says, you kill the demons, and then very quickly you bring them to me, which means they get liberated. So he was actually praising, in this way, he praised Krishna, because you kill the demons, then they get liberation. And they come to me, they enter into the, you know, go past the Brahma Jyoti and come to me, whatever. So in this way, he shows the great power of Krishna. So when Krishna comes in the material world, as I said, he also does something for the demons. He doesn't, in any way disregard them. So Krishna is very special, of course, but even the other forms of the Lord also have this ability. So we have the different qualities of the Lord mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, 60 qualities of Vishnu and 4 extra for Krishna. And those 60 qualities, among those 60 qualities which are special, which Shiva does not have and even elevated Jivas don't have, among those qualities is when the Lord kills a demon, he gets a special advantage. He doesn't go to hell. Normally we'd think that you kill the demons, they go to hell. But they don't. They get elevated. They have a good position. So when Hiranyakasipu was killed by Narsimhadeva, what happened? He didn't go to hell. He became Ravana. He enjoyed very nicely. And when Rama killed Ravana, what happened? Again, he didn't go to hell. He became Shishupala, enjoyed again very nicely. So they get some nice advantage. So this is one way in which the Lord responds to demons. He doesn't torture them. He kills them, definitely, which is painful for them. But then he gives them some nice birth next time. But in the case of Krishna, he does more than that. He liberates them. And in some cases, not just impersonal liberation, he actually puts them in the spiritual world, which is extraordinary. So that is why when Krishna killed Agasura and they saw the soul merge into Krishna, etc., then everybody was astonished. The devatas began praising Krishna, and the sages in Tapaloka began praising Krishna because of this. Wow, what has he done? He's liberated a demon. And it was the astonishment and praise was so great that even Brahma heard it up in Brahmaloka, and that is why he came down and he saw Krishna there, and, yeah, having a picnic with his friends, and then he decided to steal the cows and calves and the cowherd boys. So when Krishna performs his pastimes, yes, he doesn't punish the demons. He actually gives them an advantage. They get mukti, which even the gyanis and the yogis will take thousands of years to attain. And he gives it to the demons, who are not even devotees. But sometimes he does more than that, and he actually puts them in Vaikuntha. So when he killed Putana, Putana became a nurse in the spiritual world to take care of the Lord, because she gave her breasts and offered milk to Krishna as a demon to try to kill him. So she became a spiritual body in the spiritual world. So in this way, Krishna in no way hates the demons. He is not in any way partial to anybody. He shows mercy even to the demons and pleases them also. So this, of course, underlines the fact that Supreme Lord in no way is cruel and in no way shows prejudice to people and for no reason at all gives punishment to anybody. He rewards the demons and gives them such remarkable results. So this is the nature of the Supreme Lord, particularly Krishna. So all these pastimes ultimately illustrate the fact that Krishna has all wonderful qualities. And these through these pastimes we can understand some of these qualities. Okay, any question?
So if Putana becomes a nurse, then that must be Krishna work, because Krishna doesn't have...
He doesn't have a mother or father. Or it could be some other form where they do have mothers and fathers. For instance, we have Kila, they had a mother and father. Srimadeva doesn't, obviously. Ramchandra has a mother and father. So other forms do. Vishnu doesn't have Vaikuntha, but other forms who are also in the spiritual world do have mothers and fathers. Doesn't quite say where she went, but the purport of that is she became a nurse and had a spiritual body in the spiritual world, and she was a demon. If that is the case, then those who are devotees must get much more than that. So not only do they get a position like that, but a much closer relationship. And if they do become a nurse, it's going to be a higher level of nurse. So even though she was a nurse, she's probably, you know, not in a major position and still somewhat indirectly serving the Lord. Whereas a devotee would get a much more direct position. And therefore the relationship would be more satisfying because of their quality. Mentions it somewhere like that. Yeah.
That
doesn't mention that in the Gorgonadesh Deepika. It doesn't mention it. So maybe it comes later with Bhaktivinoda Thakur or something like that. It's obviously not in Vishnu Chakrabarti's or Vallabhadi Bhushan's commentaries or Jiva Goswami. They don't mention it at all. Possibly with Bhaktivinoda or something.
Oh.
Why do we say it's not easy? Well, the position of the demon is that not all demons get the chance to meet the Supreme Lord and get killed by him. That's one thing.
Not all demons get lucky.
The Lord doesn't appear all the time. And then he may not kill them directly. Maybe devotees killing them or whatever. So we can't. And the other thing, of course, is that this is an example of the Lord's mercy, that you approach the Lord in hatred and still there's some advantage. But that's not actually what the devotees aspire for, because you're not necessarily going to get a body. You may end up in Brahman also. The Lord may just get you that impersonal mukti. And if that's there for the devotee, that is hellish. So that's not very good in one sense. So it's up to the Lord what he wants to do with you. You can't decide, I want to get killed by the Lord and, you know, get a body in the spiritual world. He may just put you in Brahman. if then you're trapped there forever. So of course these things are rare. It's not that all the people, you know, it's only Krishna that does this. Narasimhadev killed Ravana, killed Hiranyakasipu, and he didn't go to the spiritual world. He just got another body as a demon and enjoyed very nicely. And the same with Ramchandra. He killed Ravana and they didn't go to the spiritual world and they didn't get mukti. So if you want to get killed by the Lord, you just may end up on Svargaloka or somewhere for a little while, or as a great king in the material world. You don't go to hell. That's the main idea. But with Krishna, it's very special. Huh? You get liberation or you go to the spiritual world.
After Hiranyakasipu was killed, then I thought that Shrinivas gave the benediction that 14 generations before or after will be liberated.
Mm-hmm.
This means, because when you pray that, please bless my father, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then, so the question was, is that just specific only to Prahlad, or is that generic? That anybody who worships the Supreme Lord will get that 14 generations before Prahlad will?
Well, in one sense, it's a general proposition, because or a general promise, because anyone who is a devotee of the Lord gives blessings to his whole family or dynasty or whatever. It's like an agata sukriti for everybody else, in the sense that they, the previous generations are responsible for producing him, so that's their agata sukriti. So whether they know it or not, they don't know it, they can't predict it, but nevertheless, because it happens, therefore there's some agata sukriti for them. Because of the agata sukriti, if they're not devotees, then eventually they can become devotees, and then they can in that way get their liberation from the material world. We can say it's a general thing then.
In Chaitanya Bhagavat, when Mukunda quotes this verse to Vidarbha Pandit in front of Pundarika Devi, it's not discussed as you explained it, that only Krishna does this, but that seems to be the significance of it, why Pundarika, you know, went into ecstasy for 6 hours after hearing that.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah.
I mean, because thinking about this,
it's not discussed.
But why else does he go into ecstasy for 6 hours?
Yeah. The other point is this, why Krishna does this? And the answer to that is mentioned in the, explained in, I think, the Markandeya Purana, but quoted in the Lagu Bhagavadamrita. And the answer is because Krishna is more attractive than anybody else. So therefore, when Hiranyakasipu sees Narasimhadev, he's not overly attracted to him. And he says, okay, he's probably Vishnu, and, you know, Vishnu's some great personality, but other than that, nothing. And therefore, I'll fight with him and try to kill him. And when Ravana saw Ramchandra again, oh, by his punya, he's become a great king, so he's Rama, and he rules from Ayodhya, etc. But so what? I'll try to kill him. But when he became Shishupala, then Shishupala saw Krishna, and he could not forget him. He heard the name Krishna, he could not stop repeating the name. Why? Because Krishna was so beautiful. So he would be thinking of Krishna day and night, just like Kamsa was thinking of Krishna day and night. In hatred, of course, because the original motive was hatred. But once that form of Krishna got in them, they could not stop thinking of him. So in hatred, they were thinking of Krishna day and night because of Krishna's attractive form and his attractive qualities. So because of that absorption in the Supreme Lord, their sins and karmas were destroyed. And when they were destroyed, then the Lord killed them. He, Sudarshan Chakra touched Shishupala. And Sudarshan Chakra is non-different from Krishna. So it's an instrument of killing, but also the Sudarshan Chakra is non-different from Krishna, so it also has prema in it. So when it touched him, he got prema. And he went to the spiritual world. But because he was purified, because it was constant meditation on Krishna. So because Krishna has more attractive qualities than Nrsimhadev or Rama, therefore the same person who was there in three births finally meditated on the Supreme Lord in hatred and constantly, and that way he got the reward. So that shows the superior qualities of Krishna, his all-attractive nature.
Does that mean Putana also have the same Krishna enough in investment, or so there's some like attraction?
It doesn't say that, because of course it was very rather instantaneous, whereas Shishupala was living and constantly meditating day and night for so many, many, many years like that. The reason for Putana was because of her dress. She dressed like a nurse. She imitated a devotee. Because she imitated a devotee, therefore Krishna got merciful to her. So it's like an Agata Sukriti, I suppose, that because she acted like a devotee, even though she wasn't, then that acting as the nurse was enough for Krishna to give mercy to her. Any question? No.
I remember that in the 10th canto of chapter, I think it's chapter 12, 38, that Richard Myers was astonished to hear that Agasura got Sarathi Mukti.
Yeah.
And Shloka 39 was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, and then said to say, well, what to speak of Agasura? Anybody who takes the form of Krishna would then start to So he spoke that Shloka 39 specifically to pacify him of the Richard Myers was. How is it that he got
Well, that's the mercy of the Lord. Of course, these are exceptional cases. It's not that everybody will get that. As I said, many of them just get impersonal mukti. And that's only with Krishna also. Others don't even get that. When Rama kills, he just puts them up in a position in the material world, etc. So
you make
Krishna's
a very
special
point, because I think, because like Prabhupada said, well, either you have to become a really great demon or a devotee.
Yeah.
We should not try to be a demon, we should try to be a devotee.
Yeah.
Because, not, like you say, not every demon gets that mercy.
Yeah, it's unpredictable what's going to happen.
It's unpredictable, therefore it's better to be a devotee.
And as a devotee, it is predictable, because Krishna falls under the control of devotees. That's his nature. He does not fall under the control of demons, so it is whimsical how he's going to, who is he going to choose to give mercy to them as a demon, But as a devotee, he gives mercy. So that is predictable. Dharma is praised. Yeah. So that's a general proposition that, you act according to your particular dharma, and the particular dharma is decided by several things. One, of course, is the birth, but then the qualities is the other aspect, and the two things are there. And if the qualities disappear, then what happens is the question. Is that your dharma anymore or not? So you may be demoted in that case. Well, in any case, the Swadharma is not simply the caste rules, the particular caste rules, but within that we also have general rules for everyone. They have general rules of conduct that they have to follow. And ultimately, everyone should respect the Lord. It's also a rule. And they have to have honesty and compassion and so many other comment. Even the sudra has to have these general qualities. And another quality is they should also give respect to the Lord, because nothing, none of the whole karma system will not work unless there is some respect for the Lord. You cannot commit aparad against the Lord and expect the varnashram system to go on. It won't. It becomes asuric varnashram. So there has to be some respect for the Lord on all levels, in all castes, etc. Yeah? So that has to be there. And if it's not there, then it's not really going to work anymore. So we can say that's part of their svadharma also. And if they're not following that, then they're not really doing svadharma anymore. Yeah. So he's a devotee. But he takes this role for pastimes of the Lord. Sometimes the Lord makes particular arrangements. Sometimes the Lord gets defeated. As in the case of Jarasandha and others, he seems to get defeated and run away and do some other things. So sometimes for nourishing pastimes, the devotees are also put in different types of positions. So Bhishma, for instance, is on the opposite side. But we see in Bhagavatam that actually he's a great devotee of the Lord. And when he sees Krishna fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra, he's attracted to Krishna. It's not so for Duryodhana. He's not attracted at all to Krishna. But Bhishma has had very great attraction for Krishna. His only desire was to see Krishna when he was passing out of his body. So he's also a devotee of the Lord, an interested devotee of the Lord. So he's in that position because of the pastimes only.
You explained that Krishna was taking into the consideration the feelings or the point of view of Draupadi. So how do we understand that when we consider the fundamental principle of pure devotion is Anya Abhilashita Sunya? So how can you have a different desire from the Lord that he will accommodate or that he will consider?
In the case of Draupadi, nobody actually. There's another quality of Krishna. He's called inscrutable, or Gabhira, very deep. So we don't quite know what the Lord wants. An example is given of when the Kumaras went to Vaikuntha, and then they got angry at the doorkeepers because the doorkeepers wouldn't let them in. And then Vishnu comes out, and then he speaks, and he speaks in such a way that Kumaras, who are very intelligent because they're Gyanis, and they hear him, and they don't, what does he actually mean by what he's saying, you know? So he has some other intention behind his words. We don't really know what he's feeling. And the same with Krishna, when Krishna, in the Brahma Mohana Leela, when Brahma praises Krishna after he understands his offense, etc., and then Krishna stands there, and then Brahma's wondering, did he accept the apology, or is he still angry at me, or what is he doing here? He's just standing there, and I don't know what he's thinking about. So it's sometimes very difficult to understand what the Lord wants, you know, whether he's on, you know, the side of Arjuna, whether he's on the side of Yudhisthira or whatever like this. So it's not really her. If she feels like that and she expresses that desire, she's not actually saying Krishna must fulfill it, but Krishna himself offers to do that. So she doesn't understand actually what Krishna wants, but Krishna fulfills her desire anyway. So she's not asking Krishna in one sense to do that, but certainly her desire is, her feelings are, natural feelings are there. Which, Prabhupada says here, are symptoms of a devotee, and that he mentions in relation to Arjuna also in the Bhagavad Gita, that he shows compassion. Because he says so much killing will take place in the battle of Kurukshetra, and the husbands will get killed, and then the women will be left without husbands, and then they won't have children, and they can't take care of the children. So in that sense, he's compassionate. So that's a good quality on the part of Arjuna also. So this is the case here also. Draupadi is compassionate towards him because he's a Brahmin or whatever. So it's also simply her quality as a devotee, that compassion. So Krishna, of course, can respond to that. The idea is in Anya Abhilashita Shunya that we don't make specific requests for ourselves. So therefore, Anya Abhilashita Shunya is a general proposition, but there's exceptions of accidents. For instance, when somebody says, Krishna, save me, when they're in danger, okay, that is for the self in one sense, but it's not a continuous prayer that every day we're coming up and we're asking Krishna for something. So therefore, that's acceptable in certain circumstances. Krishna, save me. Or Draupadi, when she puts up her hands and says, you know, Krishna, save me, when they're trying to disrobe her. So we say, well, she's not a pure devotee because she's asking something for herself. But these are exceptional cases, and it's not considered against the pure bhakti. Because it's not a constant endeavor that every day we're praying for material things or whatever. It's an extraordinary circumstance. And it's natural that the devotee will apply to Krishna. In other words, we're protected by Krishna. That's one of the aspects of surrender, that we feel we're under the protection of Krishna, surrendered to Krishna, and saranagati. So therefore it's natural that the devotee will apply to the Supreme Lord when he's in danger or whatever.
How do you understand that in terms of time, space, and matter? It sounds very fantastic.
Well, Krishna is ultimately the creator of the material world, and he is the master of time as well, time and space. And everything fits within Mahavishnu. Ultimately, all the universes are simply like little spots, little bubbles in relation to the body of Mahavishnu, and Mahavishnu is only an expansion of Krishna. So therefore, material world is nothing for Krishna. But any arrangement he wants, he can appear or disappear within the material world, or he can go into any universe or disappear in any universe, or he can make any universe disappear if he wants, or he can create a universe, whatever. It is nothing for him. It's nothing for Mahavishnu, what to speak of Krishna. So therefore, it's very easy for him to get outside the universe and go to see Mahavishnu or whatever. It's not a problem for him. It is a problem for Mahavishnu to see Krishna. That's why he made this particular arrangement. For Krishna, he can go out if he wants like this and see him whatever he wants. Because he's all-powerful. So time and space and wherever are not a problem for the Lord. He can expand or he can contract time and space. As in the pastimes for Dwarka. In Dwarka, there were so many palaces and so many queens and so many sons and so many servants and so many army. There's billions of people there within Dwarka. Or within Vrindavan. In the Rasleela, there were 3 billion gopis. And Krishna expanded himself to be with each gopi, so that means 3 billion Krishnas. Mm-hmm. So there were 6 billion people in the Rasleela, and they all joined in a circle. 6 billion people making a circle. That would be a very big circle, I think. It all fit within a few miles in Vrindavan forest, and they hid in the, they were there in the night in one little forest in Vrindavan. And even Nanda Yasoda and other people in Vrindavan didn't know about it. And they could expand the night to a whole night of Brahma, and that's fit within a few hours of the night. Because of the ecstasy and the joy of that dance. So therefore, time and space are now a problem for Krishna. He can adjust anything however he wants for his pastimes.
You mentioned that Dhinabandhu was saying that the lotus of Braj can close up to be a small, so you can go from one place to another.
Yeah.
Or open up.
Yeah.
So then you can put 900,000 gallons.
Yeah.
So 6 million people, that's a problem. And Gopeshwar Mahadev will be the chokigar.
Yeah.
And only females go. Sundar had to become a gopi in order to go.
Yeah.
And asked for the Devi to help him out. And he did it. 6 million people. Yeah, it's not a big deal. And only girls are allowed.
Yeah, even the Devatas couldn't see that. They could see Krishna, they could not see the gopis. Because it said the Devatas were praising, you know, the Rasa, but they couldn't see anybody except Krishna. They couldn't see the gopis at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's a type of liberation in one sense, if we think of getting sarupya, getting a form, or going to the same planet, or whatever. If that becomes the main desire, it is a little bit of a dilution of the bhakti. Huh? The pure bhakti means we only desire to serve the Lord. Huh? And the result of that is that these things are accompanying factors. Yeah, if you serve the Lord, then the Lord is very merciful, and he gives you a particular relationship or rasa, and that rasa is manifested with a particular body in a particular dhamma in the spiritual world. So these things are accompanying, but our desire is simply to serve the Lord, and these things are arranged by the Supreme Lord as he sees fit. Okay? So, we have the idea of going back to the Lord, etc. In the Bhagavatam, we do have also so many statements where talk about destroying karma and getting out of the material world. This is the result of bhakti, and this is our goal. But obviously, they're stated like that, but the real goal actually is simply to serve the Supreme Lord, and these things are accompanying factors along with that. But sometimes they're mentioned like that because in a low position in the material world, we strive to get rid of our suffering and so many things like this, so therefore that's like an immediate goal or something like that. But the real goal in pure bhakti is simply serving the Lord.
Why is it so difficult to surrender?
Well, it depends on the person. For persons who are advanced, it's not difficult at all. It's very easy. And therefore, bhakti is an easy process. That's what Krishna says. For those who are... Bahirmukha, turned away from Krishna, yes, it is difficult. Because they are conditioned to enjoy for themselves in the material world. So the enjoyment in the material world is the main cause of our difficulty in surrender. And the first way of getting rid of that is when we develop a little faith. This is the loophole by which we get out of that bahirmukha tendency. We get a little faith, and then we start turning towards Krishna because of that. And we perform bhakti, and that gradually brings about our surrender. Because the Manus, for instance, I think Vaivasvata Manu lives in Harivarsha, another Varsha. And he rules from there and he establishes Dharma. So I don't know if that's quite so. I know that the Yugas are mainly manifested within Varsha. And they don't get the same effects in other places, and they're manifested fully in Bhartvarsha. But as for the... now, of course, the Varnashram system also operates a little differently even in other Yugas. There's only one Varna in Satya Yuga, for instance. They have a concept of Dharma, but there's only one Varna there. And so only as we progress into Treta and Dwarpa Yuga, we get the divisions into four. Yeah. So it's a little bit different in Satya Yuga. So even according to Yugas, it's slightly different than other Yugas. And Kali Yuga, of course, is all destroyed anyway.
And also you mentioned Bharatvarsha is defined as a Karma Kshetra.
Well, they're called Bilasvarga. They are called Bhoma-svarga, which is kind of earthly heaven. We have the Svarga-loka, where people go because of punya, and then they fall from there into the Bhoma-svarga, these other varshas, where they can also enjoy. Yeah? And then they may return back to our place. So it's not, of course, everybody gets karma in any place in the material world, obviously, because you go up and you go down or whatever. But in Svarga Loka, they exhaust the results of their punyas. and then they'll eventually end up back on earth, and then they can do Varsha, and then they can do Punyas or Papa, and they either go to hell or go to heaven again. So in that sense, it's karma bhumi. But there's karma for everybody in the material universe. It's not that they escape from karma and they do an act that doesn't get any result. So the devotees' activities, they get results for those, and you know, even Brahma does activities, he can get results for those also. So everybody's subject to karma in the material world. But the earth is, Varsha is a particular place where you can go up and go down like that. It's more or less, let's say, Varsha-centric idea. We're speaking from our point of view, so we call this karma bhumi. But of course, every place has karma, but we're speaking of going from here, going upwards and coming back, or going downwards and coming back. So it's just a relative term. Okay. Hare Krishna.